This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara, professional animal communicator, and it is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication, they can be directed to Terry's website at www.animalwise.com. That's www.animalwise.com. Enjoy the talk. So welcome, everybody, to Understanding the World of Small Critters. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the format of the call. For some of you have been on calls with me before and some have not. Since this one was going to be smaller, small critters and smaller audience, I decided to not request questions ahead of time because we're going to have the ability for you guys to ask questions live, and we also thought since these were slightly different critters that you might have questions come to mind once you've listened. So feel free to take notes and, you know, come up with a question or two at the end because we'll still have the dedicated 15 minutes of question and answer time, okay? And for the logistics of the call, right now the call seems nice and quiet. Sometimes what can happen is a person can join, and if they have a phone that is not as clear, it can mess with the line. So if that happens, I'll ask everybody to push the 6 button to mute yourself. Or if you feel that you're going to have background noise of any kind or anything, then go ahead and push the 6 button. What that does is it mutes you so you won't be able to talk, but then you can just push it a second time to speak up. So most of the call is listening, and some of it will be also the ability to interact a little bit. And as you all hear those beeps, that's people pushing their 6 buttons. So, and the speakers obviously are not going to mute yourselves. And so I'm going to start with just a little brief, and again, some of you are dedicated, loyal fans of the Teletalks, which I so appreciate, so this is a little redundant, but for those of you that are new, I like to share a little bit about why I'm doing the teleclasses. As you can tell from a couple people in different locations, plus the fact that I left Colorado, I've had clients over the years say they really wish they could attend more of my classes, but since they were always in Colorado and I have clients all over the country, it didn't work for them. So when I relocated out to Oregon and started thinking about ways to stay in touch with my students and client base, not only in Colorado but elsewhere, I decided to do these teletalks, keep them simple, keep them short, keep them fun, and then decided to welcome in some guest speakers on some of the different animals. And so I'll be introducing our guest speakers in a moment, but these teletalks are because they're convenient, they're easy, they're fun, hopefully they're very affordable, trying to keep it that way for all of you, and basically it's a way in which we can all continue to learn from those we love, and that is the animals. It's also an opportunity to connect into the animal world of other people. It's just really fun to hop on the phone and hear other people that are focused on how much they love animals and what they believe in with animals. It's a nice connection for all of our hearts. And I just wanted to ask today if there was anybody on the line that might want to share your experience or benefits from the talks so far. And again, if you've pushed your 6 button, remember to push it again. Uh-huh.
There it is, Pam. Oops.
I'm sorry, who?
Pam.
Okay, hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Hi. Some of the girls don't know, but as you know, I work in a vet's office, and the information I've been able to share with the people that I work with, especially since we work with all these different animals, I've got a very good response and a lot of helpful hints that have helped us change the way we talk to animals when they're in there, and the big one being instead of approaching with, I'm sorry, I'm going to do this, more as a, this is what's going to happen, and talking to them and explaining things, and it's been a huge benefit.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And somebody else, was it Della?
Yeah, this is Della. And I have to say, I don't have all kinds of species in my house. I mean, I have quite a few, but I have had in the past, but it is, I just love hearing the people that have lived with them, what these little creatures are like.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really just enriched my life.
Good, good, good. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks.
Anybody else?
This is Jeannie.
Yeah, Jeannie, okay.
They've just been wonderful. I just learned a lot of a lot of new things that I didn't know. So
okay, great.
That's why I'm here.
Good, good. Always room for all of us to keep learning. Anybody else? Okay. One thing I'm hearing, and thank you for everybody for sharing, one thing I'm hearing on the line is somebody has their mouthpiece, and it might be Brenda or Bev, a little too close to your breathing, because I can hear a little muffled breathing. So if either of you have a mouthpiece or a headset on, you might want to back that up a little bit. Okay, so now I'm going to take the pleasure of letting you know who's on the line with us. Okay, I can hear something. Bev, can you speak up if you're there?
Hello?
He's not there. Brenda, are you there?
Hi, this is Alexa. I think we lost Terry.
Oh, you guys aren't hearing
anybody
me.
There?
I'm here, but I'm not hearing anything either.
I know, it just went click.
Yeah.
Huh. Just as she was
can you hear me now?
There you go. Is that you, Terry?
That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I got here. Terry, I'm Pam. I'm here.
Okay. Brenda and Bev, I was trying to say, are you guys still there?
Kelly. I'm Kelly. I'm here.
Hi, Kelly. Great.
Hi. Sorry I'm late.
That's okay. Well, that's bizarre, because I was in the middle of talking, and all of a sudden it said, you are now muted. But
right.
I didn't push anything to mute.
I know. We heard a click, and then there was no talking. I just heard somebody breathing.
So if Brenda and Bev are there and can hear me but are trying to talk and we can't hear you, push the 6 button because somehow or another I got automatically muted. This has never happened.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I hear you now.
Hi, this is Brenda.
Hi.
Wow.
Okay, you're back. Did you guys get the same message? Were you told you are now muted?
Well, I did earlier. While you were talking at the very beginning, I was told I was muted.
Okay.
I didn't press the 6 button.
Okay. Well, I have no idea how the call just muted some of us when we weren't muting ourselves. I did not do a group mute. So if you go to talk, either of you, guest speakers, if you go to say something, or the others for that matter, make sure you push the 6 button first if we're not hearing you. Okay, so.
Okay, do you want the guest to also mute?
No, not necessary. Because
okay.
I'm going to want you to maybe comment or something. Yeah.
Okay.
Brenda, you're still with me?
I am.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. Bev, you still with me?
I am.
Okay, good. All right, so I think what I'm going to do is just trust that everybody can hear us. And if for some reason you're having troubles or anything, the easiest thing to do is just call back. Hang up and call back in. But I think I somehow or another think that messed with some of us. And if you are trying to talk and you heard the message, you are now muted but didn't do anything to your phone, then just push the 6 button if you're trying to participate. Okay, sorry about that little glitch. I've never had that happen. All right, so I'm going to move on. And now I'm going to say who we have on the call as our guest speakers. We have Bev Ensley. And Bev lives in Evergreen, Colorado, and some of you have met her. She's been rescuing rabbits for 10 years. She currently has 8 adorable rabbits of her own, and she has a strong passion to inform people about their very different personalities and how to respect them. So, Bev, I just want to welcome you.
Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome, and thank you for taking the time to do this. And Brenda Sandoval, lives in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and she has been breeding and showing hedgehogs for 7 years. She currently has 17 and 3 babies in the nest, which might be the ones we saw, I'm not sure. Maybe that was an older litter. She's educated the public about hedgehogs for many years and has a real passion to help people learn how to best treat hedgehogs and raise hedgehogs. So welcome, Brenda.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, and so as you saw from the promotion of this talk, I call it Understanding Small Critters. I specifically asked Brenda and Bev because out of my client base, you know, obviously the majority tend to be cats, dogs, horses. Next come rabbits and hedgehogs. And thanks to Brenda, I've infiltrated a lot of the hedgehog world because when she first started doing consults with me, kind of told the Hedgehog Network, and there's a tight network out there, so I have several hedgehog clients. And several people do have, you know, rabbits as well. I don't have as many of the others, but I am going to talk briefly about turtles and snakes and birds. Okay. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about just why I'm inspired to do a talk specifically on small critters. And the reason is because the small critters often have messages for us that are different than the more domesticated species. I consider dogs, cats, and horses much more domesticated by humankind than I do the others. Number one, it's simply because there's not as many of them in mass living in homes in a domesticated way. But also, I believe some of them are just going to stay true to form of who they are. They're going to be a little bit more wild and natural to their instincts. So I have a little story that I wanted to share of how I became inspired with this talk, and that is one of my clients has turtles. She rescues turtles, box turtles, large turtles, different species of turtles, different breeds of turtles. And so she had me checking in with her turtles at one point a few months back. And I'm by no means a turtle expert at all, and I have no problem saying to a client, I'm not sure what they eat, but I keep seeing this, or, you know, just tell them what I get, and then they help me make sense of it because I don't know the turtle world. And so there was this turtle named Fred, and she told me that he was in hibernation, and she puts them, that she said there's certain turtles that hibernate and some don't. So the ones that hibernate, she puts into a big box and covers the box and checks on them once a month. And so she didn't tell me this yet, but she said, can you check in with the ones in hibernation? I said, sure, I'll tell you what I can get. And I got this lively little guy, and he showed me his color on markings on his shell and who he was, so I described him, and she said, oh, yeah, that's Fred. And he said, can I come out now? And I said, oh, but you're in hibernation. He says, I don't want to. I don't want to hibernate. I'm bored. And she started laughing and said, well, I've checked on him, and when I check on him, he's awake, so I cover it back up so he'll go back to sleep. And I said, well, he's not sleeping. He's in there saying, can I come out? I want to come out and play. And so she got a little nervous because she...
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
Oh, geez.
Okay, that happened to me again, but this time I pushed 6 right away.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I do not know why. You are now muted. Okay. So she said, but he can't. It's not good for him. And so when I said to her, well, he just doesn't want to hibernate, and he said he knows he's a turtle, and he knows he's supposed to hibernate, but he'd rather be hanging out, and he wants to have fun, and as long as he's going to be a domesticated turtle, he wants to have more fun before he dies, and so he, you know, told us this whole story. So she said, well, I have to check with some of the turtle experts and see if that's safe to his health, because I've never heard that that's okay. Well, the next time I talked to her was a few months later, and she said, by the way, Fred's been out ever since. He's really happy. He gained some weight. He's having a blast, and he's hanging out with the non-hibernating turtles, and he doesn't even think he's a hibernating turtle anymore. So it was fun for me to have that experience because, number one, I learned a little bit about hibernating turtles and how she puts them into hibernation for their well-being and to keep them as natural to their way of living, but also to realize that as we shift these animals into our lives and our lifestyles, some of them are going to shift a little bit more into life with us. I know, for example, snakes tend to retreat a lot and tend to sleep a lot. Now, some of them tell me that they're sleeping a lot more than they would in the wild because they're bored and they're in a confined space. So they just go into more of a hibernation energy. So one of the things I just want to emphasize is obviously any species that we choose to love and care for is going to be influenced in a positive way by our love and our care, but also might be influenced as far as their lifestyle just by who we are in domesticating them. So as you guys learned today a little bit more about the small critters, it's to help us just understand them more so we understand what we're doing if we're having them as companions or if we have clients or friends that have them as companions. So definitely we are here to honor the unique world and perspectives of these special species. It's time to, you know, really learn from a hedgehog what, you know, what they want us to know. So Brenda will be giving us information on how to care for a hedgehog and what they're about and what they're like, and then some stories we'll both be sharing about what we learned directly from the hedgehog, and same from the rabbits. So obviously, as you all know about animal communication, to understand a species means to learn life from their perspective. And with that, I just wanted to go a little bit into my rabbit, Josephine. Some of you have met her. I rescued Josephine. Somebody found her in a field. Somebody had dumped her, pet rabbit, and this is very common, I've learned. Never planned on having a rabbit, though I always thought it'd be fun to have a rabbit. And so when I rescued Josephine, someone had dumped her in a field where coyotes were, and somebody would have gotten her that night. So a friend captured her and brought her to me. And she's been teaching me the rabbit journey ever since. I've had her about 3 years now. And when I moved from Colorado out to Oregon, I decided, even though she said she really didn't want a rabbit companion because she had never had one and she didn't know what that meant, and she was angry about the way the people dumped her, and took her about a year to get over her anger, which was understandable. I decided I was going to rescue another rabbit because I have a small bedroom that is just being the rabbit room, and I thought they can live side by side if they need to, if she doesn't want to welcome him into her space. So for those that don't know, just in a nutshell, to introduce two rabbits is an experience I'll never forget. For those that don't know, a rabbit will kill another rabbit when they first meet if it's not supervised, and they could hurt them seriously, and Josephine's energy, she could indeed have done that. So they have to do bunny dating, and she had to go speed dating, so I had to take her to the bunny rescue in Portland, and she met 9 boy bunnies, and she attacked all but Timothy. That's who lives with me now. And so since she didn't attack him, though she didn't play with him or interact with him, he was the date of choice, so we brought him home. And then I proceeded to start doing bunny dates. You have to do them in neutral space. It's recommended, and I'm not going to go into it in too much detail, but it's recommended that you put them on the dryer together and turn the dryer on so it makes them a little fearful, and then they cuddle a little and they turn to each other for comfort. And all of this is supervised and for brief periods of time. And Bev has been my confidant. I've sent her many emails saying, now what? So I have journaled much of this, and as some of you know, I'm working on a book, so I just thought I would briefly read you bunny date number 10. I write here, bunny date number 10 seems to be the turning point. As the rain falls lightly from the sky and I find myself enthused about the bunny date this morning, I make a bold decision for a date at bunny home headquarters rather than in the kitchen. Yesterday went so well that I thought I should begin again with an adventure on the washing machine. But when I went into the bunnies to say good morning, I found them visiting with one another through the wire barrier rather than the previously typical movements of Timothy being curious and willing to approach her, only to be rejected repeatedly with quick bunny nips from the female side of the room. Today, however, they seem to be chatting, and dare I point out that Josephine seems comfortable for fear she'll dart at him just to prove me wrong if I'm pointing this out. Since they are being bold, I told myself, then I will be bold. Today, I announced to them, you will be dining together in bunny headquarters, and off to the kitchen I go for yummy organic veggies. I return with lettuce, parsley, a piece of broccoli each, and a couple banana nibbles, just in case I need to sweeten things up. Their meal is arriving, piled on my cutting board as if it's a serving tray. Next, the dividers between the two areas are pulled away, and I place the greens in 2 piles about 6 inches apart and encourage them to come and dine together. All goes well. All goes very well. They each hop all around the area, exploring everything as if I had just redecorated, passing one another easily and comfortably after they've had a huge meal rather rapidly. There's only a bit of hesitation in Timothy's hop, and only once did Josephine dart at him while he was eating, but he is learning to deal with her. He stood his ground. He moved slightly, kept on chewing, and said, I'm eating. Simple as that. She ignored him and began to eat. I watch the interactions with a grin on my face and happiness in my heart. I decide to sit down with them and join the fun. Typically, I've been very reserved with my energy during their dates, with intentions to not interfere at all, but to be available for mishaps. I have been offering soothing voice tones with compliments of their good behaviors, but today I'm interacting with them actively, and I keep them moving along while reaching out and petting their soft heads when they come my way. Timothy checks in regularly with me, proud of himself and also gathering a bit more courage from me. I suggest to him that grooming her today would be a wonderful step. He hops away after receiving this message, and I can tell he is really trying to prepare himself for this, but it's a struggle. It reminds me of when a boy is finally feeling liked by the girl of his interest, and now that she notices him and is being kind, he has found himself at a loss as to what to do next. I ponder this bunny dating experience, and I begin to notice the similarities to human behaviors. First, there are the societal pressures that we should pair up. I realize this is the pressure we put onto Josephine and all of the boy bunnies during the speed dating. Next, there are the family pressures to find happiness by finding a companion. That would be my desire for Josephine, to have fun with a rabbit in her space rather than be alone. And next, there is the pressure from everyone around us that loves us that we should make it work once we have found a suitable companion. Yep, guilty as charged here. I really want to see this work out for both of them. After all, I was smitten with Timothy B. by the second day. The final pressures are usually the worst by our society, and they are created by the players involved in the relationship. In this case, it's bunnies. This is when expectations get in the way. The expectations that we put upon the new companion, as well as pressures put onto oneself to be successful in the endeavor. I watched Josephine gradually overcome her strong instinctual drive to send him away. First, she shifted from attempting to get rid of him completely to an advancement to needing to prove her power. And now she seems to be allowing him to exist and surprisingly finding herself curious. Timothy, on the other hand, has been interested since he first met her. He had a bunny companion who died, so he's really ready for another friend. He's open-minded, trusting, and brave, though a bit impatient, and I think understandably so, with Josephine's need to repeatedly hump and nip at him. Now they embark on a new phase, the getting to know you and learning how to live with you phase. And anyone who has been in a long-term relationship knows that this can be an ongoing process. As I finish up this pondering, suddenly I realize a tiff breaks out in the bunny litter box. There's tumbling, there's flipping, there's nipping, there's biting. I quickly rush over and stop this fight during cohabitation attempt number one. And I can definitely state that they have just had a roll in the hay. Unfortunately, this one was not the kind that typically leaves one feeling chipper. So there's just bunny date number 10. So I think I could write a whole book just about bunny dating. And I'm happy to say, 4 months later, Josephine and Timothy are best buddies and great companions. Mm. And it usually takes about a month. So it took them 4, and I'm a very patient person, and once I decided to remove myself from the situation and my expectations, it got a little bit easier for everybody. So as you guys, anybody that's listening to this, might be working with animals that are slightly different and not behaving the way we want them to, you have to realize it's their world, welcome to it, and it's our job to not try perhaps quite as hard. And with that said, we are going to go into learning a little bit more about hedgehogs with Brenda at this time. Brenda, are you there?
Take it away.
Yes.
Okay. As Terry said, I've been in the hedgehog realm of their world for 7 years. It started out where I just wanted one as a pet, and it became like Lay's potato chips. You can't have just one. And part of the challenge and the enjoyment that we get from the hedgehogs is the fact that they come in many different colors. There's 92 recognized colors by the International Hedgehog Association. When they're born, they're about the size of 3/4 of your thumb. They weigh between 6 and 8 grams. Some have been up to 10 or 12 grams, and that's considered very, very large. And they quit growing normally about 450 to 550 grams, and so they weigh about a pound and fit into the palm of your hand. I do not recommend hedgehogs for small children. They are a shy animal, so they don't do well when they hear the children screaming, running through the house, slamming doors type of thing. They will get huffy and not necessarily be a real good pet. There are exceptions to those personalities, but for the most part, they're just not an animal for a small child. So when I'm interviewing potential buyers or people interested in learning more about hedgehogs, I normally do not recommend them for children under 10 to 12 years old. And like I said, there are exceptions to the rule, but that's just kind of been my guideline, and that works good for the animals. When they are sold, interestingly enough, they make a very good pet to go into a home all by themselves. They're not a social animal. They do very well just being by themselves. Now, with all of mine, I do have several females that I house together. However, I never put males together because males can be very territorial, and it's very rare that two males can be in the same habitat together. I feed them mainly a diet of kitten foods. I like the Royal Canin brands, but I normally mix about 3 to 4 different kinds of kitten and cat foods of the dry kibble together. Sometimes I add yogurt drops. Some of them really love little vanilla yogurt drops. And then for treats, I give them treats at least a couple times a week, if not daily. They love mealworms because they are insectivores. They also like crickets, but I don't deal with the crickets very well. So I do mealworms. I order about 5,000 every 6 weeks to feed to my group. And they like what we call salmon fruit, which is basically baked salmon, fluffed or, you know, shredded. And scrambled eggs is another favorite. I put a little bit of butter or mayonnaise in with that so they get a little bit of oil, because their skin does tend to get dry in the Colorado altitude. They also like roasted chicken, roasted turkey. I've known some that would eat fruits and vegetables. Mine don't. They tell each other if there's new ones coming in not to eat the fruits and vegetables, because they don't eat the fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I have found that communication with animals in a household to be very difficult, because what mine will eat, my friend Erin across town that breeds hedgehogs, hers won't eat like the yogurt drops. Mine love the yogurt drops. And things that hers eat over there, mine won't eat. So they kind of congregate together in what they like to eat, and they tell each other about it. And hedgehogs live to be, their average lifespan is about 3 to 6 years. And it's not as long as we would like it, but we just don't seem to be able to find out what they need to make them live longer. They do get a genetic disease, some of them. It's called wobbly hedgehog syndrome. It is a genetic disease, and it is not truly diagnosed until after they have passed over. We can tell from their actions if they may have it. However, there are some that do get diagnosed with it that we wouldn't necessarily have thought that they had. And wobbly hedgehog syndrome is like MS in people. It's a gradual paralyzation, starts normally in the back legs. However, I have it seen start in the front limbs. And it's progressive, and it goes to the point where they can't walk to their food or their water. They have to be hand-fed. Then their digestion becomes very poor, so that they have to be fed baby food or very soft food. They are not in pain with this, and so it is a challenge when we have one, or I'm saying we as the whole community of hedgehogs. I've only had experience with two of my own that came from other breeders. We kind of have to determine when the right time comes for them to help cross them over, because they do get to a point where they just can't handle it anymore. And in particular, I had one, and I knew he had it. It was very obvious. And I worried about the time when I would have to help him pass over. And it came one evening when I failed him a syringe, 1 cc of food, and he immediately fell asleep. It was all he could do just to take down that 1 cc of food. And next morning got up while he was bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I realized I'd made a mistake. And so I gave him another syringe of food, and the exact same thing happened. And so I knew he was just ready to go, that it was too much for him to try to even digest his food anymore. So there are movies, if anyone is interested in wobbly hedgehog syndrome, which we also call WHS, there are videos on YouTube that you can go and see that horrible, horrible disease in action. The other things I get are like tumors and cancers and so forth like that. I did have one pass that had a tumor on her bile duct, which was just crazy. I just never heard of anything like that before. They are insectivores. They're not rodents, so their teeth don't grow if they are broken, and for that reason we do not use water bottles with them. We use reptile waters, gravity waters, or little crocks filled with water, because they will chip or lose their teeth on the water bottles. So throw that in there. For living quarters, basically all that's needed is a Rubbermaid Sterilite. I recommend 116 quart, which is about 18 inches wide and 3 to 3.5 foot long, and recommend an absolute flat bottom, because some of the Sterilites do have gutters around the edges. And that makes a perfect place for them to tip their food, their water, and their wheel. So the flat bottoms are very good. And as far as care, of course, they have to have a wheel for exercise. They will run between 5 and 7 miles a night in their prime, and they will poop and urinate. Sometimes they don't, but a lot of times they do poop and urinate and then run in it. So those wheels need to be cleaned daily. And I also can't stand anything floating in the water bowl. So I do their water every day and freshen or top off their food every day and clean their cages. Now, what we use for bedding for the hedgehogs is fleece. And basically, we can sew several pieces of fleece together to make like a pad for the bottom of the crate. And then they in under our burrowers, so they do not like to sleep outside. And we have found that they gravitate towards the fleece, and it's not as messy as a wood chips or some of the other substrates that they have out there. So we use the fleece, and it's real easy to change that out and throw it in the washer, and we have, you know, just piles of all different sizes, so that works really well for them. Finding a hedgehog to purchase is hard. There is a high mortality rate with the babies. The mothers will kill the babies if they feel like they're being threatened. I do not keep males around my females that are giving or going to give birth because I feel like they will kill their babies to protect from the males that are out there. It's kind of that wild animal instinct. Normally, with the first litter out for the mom, the first baby out will normally suffocate through the birth canal because it is so small. And if they're, you know, just a little bit, if they're that 10 or 12 grams, it just is a process for the mother to get them through, and they do suffocate. If the mother doesn't know quite how to take care of them, they don't have those real natural instincts like cats and dogs, if they wander away and they're out there in the coolness and not kept warm enough, they will die because of that. And then they're just born, you know, some that are born that just aren't supposed to make it. So needless to say, all of the good breeders that are out there that are doing breeding by rules and members of the USDA, they are working with waiting list right now. My waiting list is currently out about 8 months, and I'm just now starting to take deposits to be on my waiting list again. But up until just a few months ago, people were having to wait a year for me to furnish them a hedgehog. So we are getting caught up slowly but surely. In some states, you can find hedgehogs in pet stores. And for all the reasons I don't recommend getting any animal from a pet store, the same goes for hedgehogs, because normally they come from a backyard breeder who is really in it for the money. They're not watching the pedigrees or the lineage of a particular animal. They just want to mass produce and sell them to pet stores to pad their pocket. So if you're going to get a hedgehog or think about getting a hedgehog, it's, of course, best to get from a breeder. And most normally and generally, you will need to be on a waiting list at this time.
Great. Thank you. Who would have thought there's a bunch of people out there waiting for hedgehogs? I just love that. That makes me smile.
I checked my mail this morning. I have 3 emails.
Wow.
I get an average of 2 inquiries a day, either by phone or by computer.
Wow.
And, you know, they're kind of a new, unique gift, and they are cute as a button, and everybody wants one.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness they're smart enough to be going through the right people to protect the species. That's great. Thank you, Brenda.
Yes.
Brenda's
mm-hmm.
going to talk more, everybody, just so you know. She'll talk a little bit more in a bit. But we're going to go to Bev now and hear about rabbits. And because I am still hearing some background noise while you were talking, I was hearing some, so I just threw my mute button on. So I'm thinking it might have been on Bev's end. I don't know if it was wind or something on the speaker. But, Brenda, I am going to ask you to go ahead and just use a mute button on your phone or push
sure.
6, okay?
Okay.
And, Bev, if you could please join us and tell us all about rabbits.
How are you today? Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, good. When I tried moving the speaker totally away from me, I mean, I'm not on a speakerphone, but it still made that noise. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
But I actually have been doing rescue for 10 years, but I got to know rabbits when I was a little girl. I had a bone disease, and I was on crutches for 3 years, and we really didn't have a lot of children in the neighborhood. So my mom got me a big white rabbit. I have no idea why she chose a rabbit, but she did. And this rabbit became my best friend. And I learned very early on they could communicate, heal us. Her name is Snowflake, and she really took great care of me. So as an adult, I felt that I owed Bunny something. And rabbits basically come in any size that you can think of. The largest breed, I'm sure y'all have all seen the email with the giant, huge rabbit from Germany. I have no idea what that is. But mostly, you have your Flemish giant, which runs in the 20-pound range. For those of you who have the photograph of the five rabbits in a group, the big boy in the front is a French Lop, and he would run about 14 pounds. You then go down into many different breeds, English Lops, the specialty lion's heads, all the way down to the little tiny Netherland dwarfs. And basically, the rabbits are either lop-eared, which means down-eared, or just the up-eared. And we have a lot of mixes. I have no idea how many different colors there are or mixes, because it's just rabbits breed like rabbits, so there's no telling. When you do look out your window and you see wild rabbits and you think, well, I bet, you know, a domestic rabbit could go out and live with the wild rabbits. Well, they actually can't. That is a totally different species. They cannot mate, and they won't be accepted. And our domestic rabbits have lost their knowledge of how to live in the wild. Their closest relatives are hares and pikas. They are not rodents. They're of a species called lagomorphs. And let's see, pikas, hares, and hares are their relatives. That species has a double row of incisors. So behind the bunny's front teeth, there's another little tiny, like a little peg tooth. Their teeth grow constantly, so they do gnaw to keep them short. And let's see, on average, they can, as a domestic rabbit, live 12 years or more. We find that a lot of times they don't make it that long, which is really unfortunate. We do try to do things to help their longevity. Spaying and neutering is extremely important for a rabbit. The females, if not neutered, have a 80% chance of having uterine cancer before they get to be 6 years of age. They also go through a bunny PMS every month, building nests and fretting, so it's just not a kind thing not to neuter them. The males would be more like a male cat, spraying everything. So the neutering is good for their longevity and for their quality of life. So they're not a good pet for a small child. They have very, very fragile skeletons. And they have so much strength in their back legs that if they're not properly held, they can kick and break their own backs. So we really do not recommend that children pick up a rabbit. We normally encourage them to sit on the ground. We'll put the bunny in their lap. Because if they're kicking and hurt themselves, they're going to scratch the child. It's not going to be good. Their main diet is hay and water. Their absolute best thing you can give a rabbit is nice big fresh hay and a bowl of water. We also don't recommend the drip feeders, the little, you know, ball hamster feeders, because they don't get enough water. A rabbit will go through my big boys. I have two of the French Lops, and they will both drink 2 large crocks of water a day. That's each. And you just can't get that much volume out of a little hamster one. We also round out their diet with parsley, cilantro, Italian parsley, any of the dark green leafy. We try to keep, it's great to give them broccoli, it's great to give them kale, but you don't give huge quantities of those because it can give them gas like it does people, and they can't burp. They physically cannot do that. So we also give them small pieces of fruit, banana being a favorite, little bit of apple, or pumpkin. Pumpkin is a great way to get their roughage. And I do want to take a moment to say I am giving general instructions. I found that none of this ever applies to Josephine. It has been, she has taught me more about things I didn't know about rabbits, and I still don't.
Josephine's on the planet to do everything otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, so this obviously does not apply to Josephine, but for other rabbits. as far as their living conditions, we try to use the metal pens and give them a nice big space. We put a little piece of carpet down if they don't eat it. Then they can lay on that and stay warm. We have a box because rabbits like to hide. In your box, you put two holes. One hole would be like a rabbit trap. Two holes means they have an escape route. And then we have a litter box, which I like to use wood stove pellets because they're cheap. And they're really good about keeping any aromas away. But a clean litter box, you never have much of an aroma anyway. Then we have the hay bin, which I put above the litter box so they can eat their hay, poop in the litter box because they tend to poop while they're eating, and once they've done that, they go to that same spot. So the litter box training is really very easy and has to do just basically with the place they pick and how the hay is set up. You never, ever use cedar shavings with a rabbit. The shavings, any of the aromatic woods, can cause lung problems. They are a prey animal, so they have to be treated gently and sweetly. They can literally die of fright, and unfortunately, I know of a case of that only last week when I was answering the hotline. Some rabbits like to be held, but most really don't. They don't have any way of holding on, so if you're carrying them around, some rabbits are totally good with that, but the vast majority are not. They much prefer if you would lay on the ground and let them come up to you, and you can pet them and kiss them and watch them run circles around you. And that's one thing about petting a rabbit. Since they are prey animals, you really don't want to open your hand and reach for their head. There's no difference between that and an eagle claw. So you use the back of your hand and go underneath. They love to be scratched under their ears, behind their ears, and they'll do a little chatter with their teeth. That's their way of purring. Unlike a cat, they don't like to be scratched right directly underneath their chin. There's a scent pocket there, and you can't smell it, but other rabbits can, and that's the way they mark things. You'll see them go up to a piece of furniture they think is theirs or they want to mark as their territory, and they'll rub their chin on it. And when they do that to you, that means you're really special. You've been owned by a rabbit. Let's see. As far as longevity, they do really well in captivity, and we're learning more and more about the care of rabbits, but there are some ailments they do get. One of the most common that I know of is GI stasis, and that can come on very quickly, where your bunny can be eating and doing great, and a few hours later, they refuse to eat. And when they stop eating, then they stop producing poop, and bacteria begins. It's really kind of a little bit of a blockage issue. So there are certain drugs that your vet can give, and subcutaneous fluids, and we'll get the bunny going. And this is a problem that you do have to go immediately to the vet. It can't be left. And another ailment that they might get would be head tilt. And head tilt can be caused either by an inner ear infection or some sort of a kind of a protozoa. And when they get head tilt, you'll see them listing to one side. And if it's left untreated, they will literally lose all their balance and simply roll. And they have to be propped up with towels and stopped rolling. It can be treated. It needs immediate vet care, and there is a drug, fenbendazole, that will take care of that. They may end up with a little bit of a slanted view of the rest of the world, a little bit of head tilt, but we're now finding that acupuncture is wonderful, and massage, for getting that little head back. But even if they do continue with head tilt, they think they're just fine. I mean, they don't know that they're off balance at that point. Even if their head is tilt, they see everything just great. They're just fantastic companions, besides the fact, as Terry has learned, that it's hard to have just one. They really do need to live in pairs. They will groom each other and care for each other. And they're so very clean, and they're extremely smart. They know their names. They know certain words. I have bunnies that come when I call them, and other bunnies that simply look at me and say, yeah, I know you're calling my name, but I'm busy. I'll catch you later. So, and they do get bored. They need toys. They need something to keep them active because they want to be active. I have several bunnies who, when I come in, since they are silent animals, they will pick up their bell or pick up a little key ring of keys or whatever and throw it. I know they want attention right then. They're throwing these things in the air. They will throw them in their food bowl. They'll throw them in their water bowl. They will tell me what needs attention immediately when I walk in. And the basic care of a bunny, unfortunately, it's not like people think when they get a rabbit and say, well, you know, this will be great because I'll go away for the weekend and I'll leave them some pellets and water and everything will be fine. Well, that doesn't work because they can get the stasis or one of the other ailments that needs to be treated immediately. And one of the stasis germs, which you don't get as often as others, but can literally kill a rabbit in several hours. So they just simply cannot be left alone over the weekend. When you have a bunny, you want to perform basic monthly fun grooming tasks. First thing is to get the
Bev, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I'm going to ask you to not go into that much detail just now for this particular topic.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Good.
If you can just wrap up on that part, because I'm watching the time.
Okay.
If you can just wrap up on that part, a statement or two, why they're wonderful companions.
Oh, why they're wonderful companions. Well, there's nothing quite as entertaining They're just so darn cute.
Absolutely.
And they will seek out your companionship.
They will. That's true. Thank you.
Thank you
for having to interrupt, but I do have to watch the time for everyone.
Not a problem.
Okay. I'm going to talk just real briefly here about snakes, turtles, and birds. And the most important thing I need to say is I'm not an expert on any of them. Rather than do a talk just on snakes or a talk just on turtles or birds, because I do not have enough of a draw for that, I just wanted to refer to a few things. And one thing that's very important is I find that some people that have snakes, turtles, and birds do not give them enough movement, do not give them enough space. I think that our society has decided it's okay to keep birds in a cage and snakes in a tank. And most of my clients that have these types of animals do indeed let them out and exercise them. But I think it's very important for all of you to be aware and to share with others that it's like being in prison for any animal to be confined to a small space constantly, nonstop. It's obviously not good for their health. It's obviously not good for their mental state, and it surely is not a quality of life. So if anything, we need to make sure that people understand when they have these critters that they need space, they need exercise, they need to explore, they need to move like they are meant to move, they need to see things, they need fresh air, they need sunshine. There's benefits to living with each of them for sure. I have, you know, some clients that just absolutely love all their snakes, and a few clients that love their turtles, and a good handful, if not more, clients that love their birds. But again, it's more of a minority out there in the pet-loving world. And one of the things we can do is make sure people are conscientious and do a good quality care for these types of species so they don't get neglected and or over-purchased or overbred, and et cetera. I mean, we could go into all kinds of things about birds being stolen from the jungle and being sent over in cases and, you know, half of them die and all this just so someone can have a pretty colorful bird. I think that most of the people that I would be talking to or be listening to any of these talks are going to be conscientious human beings, but it's just nice to put out there. So, because remember, we're all stewards on behalf of the animals. It's our job to be a voice for them when they can't be a voice. One example I have of that is that I have a rabbit. I have a neighbor about 3 blocks away I saw one day riding my bike that has a rabbit in a tiny little cage out on their front porch, and my heart sank, and I went up to, you know, just send her some love, and I was on the sidewalk, and the man came out and was very nice and said, oh, you can come meet her, and I went and met her, and she told me that she just did not want to live that way, plus I knew she's not going to do well in the heat, so I gently talked with them, and I didn't say, you know, how dare you do this, or I just gently talked with them about what rabbits need and shared my story of how I've learned rabbits, and you know, she might not do well in the heat and et cetera. And it turned out that they said, well, we're thinking about another home for her. And so I put it out there to the universe. I'm on a quest. I want to find a home for this cute little girl named Ginger. And I can't bring her to my house where Josephine would absolutely ruin my household peace and harmony. And so I told her I was on a quest and I would help her, and was getting my hair cut the other day. And my hairdresser said, I'm thinking about a bunny. I haven't had a bunny in years, and I'm thinking about going to the shelter and maybe getting a couple rabbits because I miss them. And so I said, no, wait, and was able to hook them up, and she's going to pick this little girl up on Monday. So when you see a situation that's hard to see or troubling to you, remember, if we just put the love out, we put the intentions out, sometimes we can help, whether it's directly or indirectly. And know that they're living in their worlds as best as they can, and know that, of course, people like us are going to love snakes, turtles, birds, any kind of small critters with good intentions. Okay, and with that said, and looking at the time, and we started a little bit later because of the glitches, I'm just going to give us a few more minutes here. I was going to ask, Brenda and Bev, we talked about referring to some of the benefits of animal communication with these critters. And so if you could each just share one story briefly, very briefly, of something that helped you with animal communication to understand your hedgehog or your rabbit better. And Bev, would you start?
And yes, I had to unmute.
Okay.
I have a rabbit that I have had since he was 7 weeks old, and he's always been a little bit fearful. And as he got older and he lost his mate, he seemed to be very depressed, or I didn't really know all the problems. So Terry came over and spent some time talking to Albert, and he was very sad and not optimistic about the years ahead of them and just was unhappy and uncomfortable. And Terry suggested that I take him to the vet, see if we could, you know, he seemed to have some tightness around his shoulders. And I did. I took Albert in and explained to the vet what Terry had told me. And he put Albert on some arthritis meds, the glucosamine, chondroitin, and those, and also an anti-inflammatory. And Albert has become a new bunny. He's still shy, but he moves, he grins his mate. And when Terry checked in with him a couple of weeks ago and asked if any of the bunnies had anything to say, Albert could not wait to tell her that he was now feeling perky.
Thank you. And that's a good example of how we have to, you know, not judge something right away, not panic right away. I mean, just because he was sad and not moving a lot didn't mean there wasn't room for progress. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
And Brenda.
Well, it was really hard for me to come up with one story, but I think I'll go back to the very first head talk that I did have and how I did meet Terry and became a big believer in animal communication at that point. And that was with Mr. Paco. He was our very first one, and he was taken ill. And I had him into the vet, and the vet couldn't figure out what was wrong. And I finally asked the vet to do a blood workup on him, and that showed that, you know, things were off, but still nothing that she felt couldn't be treated with antibiotics and different types. And we did the antibiotic round, and he kept going downhill. And so just about a week before he died, I had a conversation with he and Terry, and he told Terry that he had a headache. He had a really bad headache, and he just wasn't feeling good. And at that time, I thought, well, gosh, is this really for real? Is animal communication really for real? So I had Terry ask him what he would like to have as a favorite fruit or vegetable, because I wanted to make sure he had everything that he really, really wanted. And so Terry asked him what fruit or vegetable he would want, and he started laughing at it. He said, don't you know I'm a junk food or a protein junkie? And fact was, Paco was a protein junkie. He would eat Cajun crawfish with me every Sunday night. He loved Cajun crawfish. And he never had touched a piece of fruit or vegetables in his life. And at that point, I knew there was a lot to animal communication and that I wanted to learn more. And it's helped me in the past now with a lot of diagnoses and even post-death things where the vet really didn't know what had happened, and they were able to tell Terry what had happened. And Paco died about a week later, and it happened. He was actually, the vet had finally agreed to do surgery on him, and she opened him up, and he had a brain tumor, and that tumor was what was giving him the headache.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I remember Paco. What a special boy.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that are working with animals in any way, just know that they love being our teachers, too, because I have no problem saying to Paco when I first met him, wow, I don't know much about hedgehogs, so, you know, just be open and be honest and tell a being, I'm not sure if I'm getting this right, or I'm not sure what to think of you. I've never talked to a hedgehog. And I remember him teaching me and just getting a sense of hedgehog-ness through him, and I can still remember that feeling. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Okay, what we're going to do now is open up to some questions, and just for the sake of us all not overlapping, I'm going to just go down my list on the roster and just ask by person if you have a question. So I'm going to start at the bottom of the list here by alphabetical. So Pam Ward, do you have any question you want to ask of either Brenda or of any of us, actually?
No, actually, I'm just sitting here learning and absorbing.
Okay, good. All right. How about Gail?
No, I'm enjoying this also. Thank you.
Okay. And Jeannie.
Yeah, I have two quick questions. The rabbit. Have you ever heard of a rabbit getting a hairball?
That's kind of the GI stasis. Rabbits will groom. They'll get hair in their stomach. They cannot expel it.
Yeah.
So you have to have a lot of roughage to push it out.
Uh-huh. thank you. And one last question. Anything to put on, we had rabbits when my kids were little, we put Tabasco sauce on the cords so they wouldn't eat them. I mean, is there any other thing to prevent them from eating telephone cords?
Yes. You go down and buy some aquarium tubing, the clear small tubing. You slit it lengthwise, you put it over the cord, and you're good to go.
Wow, great.
They will chew it, but it takes, you just check it occasionally to make sure they haven't made it through.
Thank you.
And with that said, Timothy has chewed through it at my house. And has chewed through an antique lamp cord. But I didn't know about the checking. But then, Bev, isn't there something else? Because I need to find something else, I think. Because now what I'm doing when I let them out is even though the cords are all protected, they don't get to come in my office where there's lots of tiny cords and computer cords and such. But even in the living room, I just unplug everything and throw all the cords up onto tabletops and stuff. But somebody told me somewhere along the line, isn't there some kind of more of a corrugated, a harder black plastic?
Yeah, you can go, I think, like to Best Buy or one of those places, and
okay.
You can actually pull all your cords together, and it's very big.
Ah, it's very big. Okay, so that doesn't necessarily work for one lamp at a time.
Well, and you can also, the two other quickies are you can use the decorative color little snap-on things that go on shower curtain rods. Those are bigger.
Oh, I've never seen those. Okay, all right.
And then you can also, what I had to do is I put one of the sauna tubes, the tubes like they use to pour piers and concrete.
Oh, okay.
You can put one of those behind your sofa.
Uh-huh.
And hide the wires behind those so that when they're running behind their sofa, they can only go through the tube and they can't reach the wires.
Ah, that's a very good idea. Okay, great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
We're always still learning, everybody.
Okay,
great. Jeannie, thank you for those questions. Stella, how about you? And if you're there and trying to talk, remember to put...
Okay, this is
Stella
now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I don't have any questions. I'm just loving this.
Okay, great. All right. Kelly?
Yes. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. Never pushed any buttons.
Yep. Yep.
Are there any special concerns with senior bunnies? I have a 9-year-old and an 8-year-old.
Well, that special concerns in what way?
Oh, just any, you know, I mean, they're both doing great, but should I be providing anything special for them as far, you know, just anything, is food-wise or maybe do the glucosamine even though there's no signs of any problems or...
You know, it's a good exercise to go to the vet and have a basic blood work done.
Uh-huh.
Because then you can check all the levels, and as they get even older, you'll know of any changes. You know, if they're eating well and are pooping well and still making the psychotropes and eating those, one of the things sometimes when they get into the arthritis, they'll have trouble eating the psychotropes. But, yeah, if they're doing well, I wouldn't do anything until you have a reason to.
Okay.
And I would just add to that, because I talk to so many animals, that just because an animal might be 8 or 9, sometimes, because a lot of times my clients are checking in, how are they doing, what are their needs, you know, they're getting older now, sometimes they actually flat out get offended. They don't feel older, they still feel youthful, which is good news. It's always good news to present that. So one thing I would just recommend is always put it out there to your animals. Just tell them, you know what, I'm going to see you as healthy and whole unless you show me something otherwise. Now, that doesn't mean don't go to the vet and get the checkups, of course, but just let them know if something's not right, you can just show me because otherwise I'm going to totally honor that you are the healthy, whole being that you are. And some live healthy and whole and don't ever really age much. And so they like it when we just face the moment and not assume of a certain age they're going to feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So, love it while they're healthy.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks, Kelly. And MJ?
I do have a question. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Is, as little caged animals, are they, in their own spiritual way, fine in being with people, even though they're wild in nature? I mean...
Now, are you meaning any of these small critters?
Yeah, across the board, in a general sort of way. Have they allowed themselves to be domesticated like dogs and cats have in
yes.
a joyful way?
Most of the time, yes. Factors that will affect that are lineage. Like, for example,
have a communication amongst themselves of, hey, we don't do fruits and veggies in this house, and they share that from generation to generation as they're born there. They also will share, you know, this is a place of love, these are good people, humans are a good thing, so they can, after time, start to gain respect and camaraderie and love with human companions. Also, there are some species or some beings that go into certain species because they want to come and bring us a journey. Josephine has clearly come into my life to bring me a journey, and she chose to come as a rabbit, and she chose to teach me all about getting out of any preconceived notions. This is something I teach, but she has taught me to do it to the nth degree of no preconceived notions whatsoever about a being. You must learn that individual being. And so I feel like she's been a great teacher for me, and now I take her to my classes because she's a great teacher for the students. And she loves that. She shows off, and, you know, she just has this great time teaching others to respect. So a lot of them to respect her species and respect who she is and her individuality and her uniqueness. And a lot of animals that are beings, spirits that do come into these various bodies are indeed doing that. They're helping teach respect and love and good messages on behalf of their species.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, and Alexa. Yes, Terry. Where do hedgehogs originate from?
They're from Nigeria. These that are legal in the United States are all from Africa. They, some of them call them pygmy, but that's just really not part of their name. These are African hedgehogs from Nigeria.
Okay, thank you. Okay, great question. Okay, and so that's the whole list. Anybody else want to ask something that's been stimulated in your mind since I first went through the list? Anything else?
This is Jeannie. I just have a question about bearded dragon lizards. Has anybody, I did a reading on one that was amazing. I just wondered if anybody's had any other experience with that.
I have not. I've worked with a couple of lizards and a couple of iguanas, but haven't in a long time. And since I just look at each individual one, you know, some animals, when you say you had an amazing experience, I don't know if this is what you mean, but, you know, I had two doggies that passed last year. One's named Jake, one named Shiloh, and I share this with others so they realize, because sometimes clients are wondering why things vary so much from animal to animal in their household. I believe some beings come in, and they're extremely wise, and they're extremely profound and deep and spiritual, and that's what Jake was, and real strong purpose, spiritual connections, all of that. Shiloh, she came here to be a dog. She came here to play, have a blast, be a cute Aussie, bouncy, fun, and that was it. That was as deep as she wanted to get. So I use that as an example of, you know, you could talk to a bearded dragon and have a profound experience because mm-hmm. that being is profound. You could talk to the next one and, you know, from a different household probably, and barely get the basics of this is what I want to eat and I'm fine and, you know, a little more sunshine, please.
Thank you.
So, but to answer your specific question, no, I don't have much experience with them, per se. Any other questions? Okay. So I'm going to just wrap up here with a few comments, and then we will call it good. And I would like to thank Brenda again and thank Bev very much for joining us and being a part of this talk and representing the bunnies and the hedgehogs of the world. And would just like to tell everybody that the most important thing, as you know, I've emphasized and many people emphasize, is what we're celebrating here is the love of the beings, the human and animal bond, and they're all meant to be our teachers. Everybody you come in contact with is going to sense you, feel you, talk to you, connect with you. So always see it as a journey. If you're somebody that has a hard time with snakes, perhaps go someplace where you can spend some time just sending love to snakes. I know I was at an event here in Corvallis recently called Pet Day, and you get to tour the veterinary clinic or the veterinary teaching school and other things. Well, they happened to have a snake exhibit there. There were different snake collectors that were there, and it was very professional people, and they were loving teaching about snakes. And I walked around and just sent love into every glass container, because otherwise my human head wants to walk up and be sad, like, you poor thing, I'm sorry you're in this glass container and it looks so small and I bet you want to move and all that stuff we can do in our heads. So instead I just walked up and stood in front of each one and sent them a feeling of love and admired their beauty, and it was just amazing the experience I had with most of them. Some of them could have cared less, some of them were quiet, but it just as a reminder that when there are species that are different to you and you're not sure how to operate around them, start with sending love. I was in the park the other day and I watched two bunnies that were
out at dusk and they were eating, and I sent them love. I was sitting on a table and picnic table and watching them, and they just got closer and closer and felt safer and safer as they were nibbling, and I was sending them images of Timothy and Josephine and saying, I have bunnies that I love and they're different than you, and I was just having this fun little talk, and I think it was a part of why they chose to be feeling safe, you know, nibbling in front of me, and just noticing how they were different and some of the similarities of how they moved, and just admiring and being present with species is the most important thing you can do for learning about them and connecting with them, honoring them as the individual that they are. And they always remind us, as all of them do, that they are here with their own spiritual journey and their own purpose for all of us. And it's our job to simply honor that and celebrate that with them. And on a final note, I wanted to just remind all of you, and I realize that I have so many different classes that I have to look at my own website here and tell you, what's my next talk? Maybe you guys know. Okay. July 12th, Improving Animals' Lives. Okay. This talk will address many of the requests that animals make of their human companions to get the best out of their lives. So that talk is going to be me focusing on how to enjoy life more through the guidance of the animals in your care, tips on small things you can do for improving their quality of life. So that's on July 12th. Just wanted to remind you all of that. And again, to remind you that these you do not have to attend live, so feel free to, you know, share information about them with others. And future classes that are coming up. Some of you know that I do teach classes. I just want to remind those in the Colorado area that I'm coming to town next weekend to teach my intermediate class. And I also will be doing a mentoring circle. I do that for students that have taken my first and second levels of classes. And so I'll be doing a mentoring circle on Friday the 20th. And continuing to just look forward to doing more talks this way and more connecting with all of you across the country. So thank you so very much for being here and honoring the animals and learning about new species, perhaps entirely new to you, or learning more details about some that you're already loving. If you have more issues or more questions, I, of course, recommend that you get clarity from a good animal communicator. Thank you all so very much for being here, and have a wonderful Saturday.